Yep, that's square head. Go back. Yeah, it's star. It's definitely supposed to be tamper resistant, but we are not going to worry about that. Come on. Yeah, I mean, just putting a Phillips screw on it would be fantastic, right? Nope. Oh, God. All right, well, we're done. I can't get into it. I do. Yeah, we'll just cut into it. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. So step one is to get into the box. And that is going to be creative. Oh, here. So we'll pop this and just hand this around so you guys have something to look at. So in general, this is what we're going to do. So this is inside the D-Link. You can kind of see my quality soldering job that's in that thing. The first thing that we need to do is get the serial port on this thing so that we can see what the machine is, how it works, what's going on the inside. Look at the typically OpenWRT. It's going to be some Linux distribution on the inside. And then we're going to use that to get our configuration for a MIPS router. The general idea is the first thing you want to do is get access to the router and back up the flash. There is a very vital portion of the flash known as the calibration data, and if you blow that away like I did to my first router, the wireless won't work anymore. So there's a calibration partition that explains all the things, and there you go. Yes, every unit has its own wireless calibration data. So if you blow that away, you have just made yourself a $40 Ethernet switch at that point. So you might as well just chuck it and move on. People ask me why I bring all these tools to a software conference, and I'm like, well, you never know what you're going to need. Apparently, checked baggage. Check baggage, of course.
Along with your shotgun.
Yeah, yes, exactly. That's where you keep the revolver. God.
Drew says they let her bring knitting needles on the plane. The long, sharp, stabbing kind. As long as there's yarn on them, they're fine.
They're fine. Everything's fine.
Tweezers.
Oh, Jesus. Tweezers. All right. So another little bit of trivia. The rubber feet on these things usually cover up more screws. So it's like, oh, well, there's only two screws on this. And then you start taking the little caps off, and you're like, oh, no, there's at least four more that we have to go dig through and get out. Oh, God.
Are they the same kind?
I really hope so. Did I bring my Allen wrenches? No. No, no. All right. This might take a bit of leverage. Thank you. Does anybody have an Allen wrench? Does everyone know the difference between like the serial port that's on your PC or your server or your switch and the serial port that's on these things? They're different voltages. So if you Yes, you have to. I have a few. Yeah, I mean that is a very quick way to end your science experiment. You know, to plug the 12 volt PC PC or server class serial adapter into the TTL 3.3 volt on your Raspberry Pi or blah, you know, whatever. Yeah, that's pretty much the end of your science at that point. Kind of like what I'm having right now with these screws. How's lunch, by the way? Is it sandwich? All right. I was going to say, you probably have a few minutes while I arm wrestle with this to go enjoy the bounty of BSD can. Wow, they are making this really hard on me today. Something else. I'm standing up here. I'm going to have to...
The destructive
option. Yes. We'll get out the bandsaw in a moment. But I do want to kind of wander through general soldering and stuff like that here in a minute.
You need to put that in your track
luggage. What's that?
The bandsaw?
Oh, yeah. They don't care. It's fine. Oh, I guess I should have this on the overhead so you can see it. Let me... move this over here, just for general science purposes. And the power is here, okay. That way you all can be distracted by other things. While I break out a big hammer. We're mirrored, right? Okay. So that's Powder Keg running building MIPS packages right now in the FreeBSD cluster. It's entertainment. I'm trying to get to the point where we can have something usable for people. Because, I mean, it's like really great. You get this thing and do all of this stuff. Sir?
Sorry, buddy. Can I put you over this one, too? It's for this recording here.
Oh.
Sorry, yeah, one for there and one for here.
Oh, okay.
But both of them, yeah, you have to leave both on.
Oh, I'm doing the dual mic thing.
Sorry.
Nice. All right.
Anywhere's fine, yeah.
Okay. I'll just go like that.
Yeah, let me just see if it's moving. Say something like
test. Test.
We're good.
Okay.
Thank you.
No worries. Wow.
As soon as he leaves the room, you can stop putting that power screw.
What's that?
You guys go out and stop putting that power.
We'll be doing that too, I'm sure. All right, so... these things are about $10. USB to TTL serial on the internet. If you guys have played with any of these, you know what you're about to see. If not, well, then magic will happen here. Or, you know, magic smoke will happen here. Let's find out which it's going to be. All right, so the ground goes there. Absolutely.
It was a year or so ago at Knox, the code for, I want to say IR-LCG, but that's not right.
Yeah,
those people use for infrared receivers.
Yes. Okay. Okay, so we got one of those. Super secret password.
Is there a switch for the screen
I have no idea. What's that? Oh, the actual screen goes down more?
Yes.
No, that's the light switch. Is that as low as that the screen actually goes?
I don't know. It might.
Try that. What the heck?
This is where it was in the other room.
Okay.
But that's not that.
It's not that.
Well, hold on.
I could,
No.
Maybe that is the lowest. That's it.
We have the technology to fix this. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. I'm going to go ahead and do that. And I'm going to do that. Just because you guys don't need to see that. Okay. And then I'm going to lift this up a little bit. I know, right? Okay. So, yeah. All right. We're going to do this. We're going to do this again. And then, in general, kind of show you what's going on behind the scenes. So on the D-Link, they have the ability to, they have a, in the event you blow away something bad, you do something and you make it unbootable like this. Because I wanted to leave it in this state so that you understand. It's like, oh God, what do I do now? Okay, well, the D-Links have a recovery mode that can be accessed with the reset button. Okay. So now, if I've connected, nope, I sure didn't, hold on. And now, you can't do anything. Don't accidentally plug in the 3.3 volt either. That will. I had the ground and the transmit reversed. Hold on. One would think that at this point I would have labeled all of the pins.
You can get wires.
You could, yeah, you know. All right. So, like I said, getting into the recovery firmware is easy. Okay, so there. So now you're actually in, this is actually in U-boot right now. So that's, so by default on this model of D-Link, you can't actually bypass anything unless you have physical access. So they've left just enough bits. A lot of these vendors will leave just enough bits for us to play with if you know what you're doing and you have the right screwdriver. You can get in and you can get to this point. The way that you start doing stuff, so when you fire this thing up into Linux, it's going to tell you a lot of stuff, but what you want to start doing is working with a netboot environment. You don't actually want to touch the flash first, because you want to get into a netboot environment, and then you want to be able to DD the entire flash off of the machine when you're starting to do prototyping onto somewhere else so you can pop it into a hex editor and actually see where the calibration is. Because just because U-boot is going to tell you where it has been programmed to have what the layout of the flash is. The flash is just a big 8 meg, 16 meg chunk, and typically, at least in the D-Link universe, they're only using 8 meg of that. So right around the 6 megabyte portion of the flash will be the valuable calibration data. So when you start the thing up, you're like, oh, well, I have 16 mega flash. I'll just use the whole thing. And then you wipe out the calibration data. And what's that?
What is calibration
data? It's literally unique to every single router that does wireless. It's the RF calibration data for the wireless transmitter receiver. So once you destroy that, you have spent $50 on learning. is at that point. This, you know, it's a thing that happens. I've done it. I was warned as well by to not do that, and I did it anyway.
The U-boot stuff is in the manufacturer image?
Yeah, no, the U-boot stuff is actually, this is, I would have to hook up a JTAG burner to change U-boot. So it's in the ROM of, it's part of the bootstrapping process of the machine.
Right.
It's separate.
It came from the factory.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, so this is, I will not be modifying U-boot or whatever.
Right, but you didn't install.
No, this is the D-Link modified version of U-boot for this router. So if my machine works correctly, let's see. Okay, so on this machine, we can actually TFTP an image off. I've set up TFTP, and if somebody's interested in the details of that, we can look at it. I had to do this a couple of times to figure out what the file name, you have to do it at least once to find out what file name it's going to ask for. And then we're going to tell it to boot from the image that we actually got. And theoretically, we should get some science. So I haven't actually touched the flash here. I haven't done anything really crazy. There we go.
So this is a, it said MD0 up there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's using a RAM disk booting method that we have in the tree. These things work. Things that I'm not satisfied with. OpenWRT has a robust packaging system and a robust file system that understands Flash. It uses JFFS. You can't install packages here. This image is static. So if you want Dropbear SSH or you want a DHCP server, you're gonna have to build that in the image before you burn it onto the Flash or you netboot it. I'm trying to understand how NandFS works right now, so that I can teach it all about the Atheros Flash layout and basically have to write a driver for it so that we can use it under NandFS. And then that'll allow us to do actual packages and stuff. So anyway, always bring a backup when you do a live demo. That's the lesson we've learned today. Does anybody have an Allen wrench? Starhead? No? Nothing? All right. Does somebody want to take a shot at getting these screws out while I'm up here? You want to try, Luz? I don't know. Yeah, they're star. Does anybody have a hacksaw?
I have plenty of these things. I don't think bring them with technical.
Well, why not?
I was going to my auto shop.
Oh, yeah. So that one is too big. But you might be able to. Don't be gentle with it. It'll be fine.
So this mythical calibration of your data that's on the wire.
Okay. You want to see it?
Yes, I do.
All right.
So these things come down the line at the factory, and they have some kind of automated thing that hooks up.
Boop. Yeah, they hook right up to it, and they figure out all of the signaling characteristics of the wire, and they enter in this calibration data. Go ahead.
Every single wire for every single radio is different enough to calibrate every single one.
I guess so. Yeah.
Is it device specific, not model specific?
Correct. Yeah. So. All the drivers, all the Atheros drivers assume that there is going to be a flash configuration partition, and they're going to be able to go into that flash configuration partition and find out all the magic signaling bits that are inside of it. Hold on. I have to remember where it is.
So does that actually work? Can you bring up the wireless company because it will go and grab the configuration data and everything?
Right now? Yeah, I could. All right, so... So here's all the, so the important one, it's normally called an ART. What the heck does that even stand for? Regulatory something. Make up a configuration here, or an acronym. art. I don't know, you guys want to pipe to more? I need to pipe it to a hex editor here. But so DDIF equal dev map art BS equal 64K. Why is it 64K? Because I know, and we'll look at how I know, that that's 64K in a minute. Pipe one. NC.
We have a driver that's mapping that particular area to fly.
What's that?
We have a driver that's mapping that particular area to fly.
Yeah, it's called map. I'll show you the kernel config so you can do all of the, you can see what drivers and whatnot. Am I doing this right?
So this is the, if I just fly over the whole flash, it's all magically not available anymore, but everything, and now and there's mapping, you've got a mapping in the flash and your stuff.
Yes, I'll show you how to get the mapping here in a minute. So, maybe?
Oh, this sounds so sophisticated.
Yes. All right. Password 123. Okay. So notice that the default subnet that the U-boot parameters use is different than the than what our image system comes up with right now. So I will call this that. Sure. One dot, was that 20? I'm just thinking of that. Yeah, to make sure that's working. Okay. Oop. Derp. Try that. All right. And then we're gonna this here, dev map art. 64K. Don't even worry about breaking it.
Well, why don't you spread it?
Okay.
Is it a star or a half?
It's star. All right. Now, what's 1 minute? Hex dump dash. See, thank you. God.
You went for the characters.
Yeah, you'll actually. Well, actually, it'll make a little bit more sense here. All right. So magic bits, magic bits, magic bits. Okay. Now, this. Why do I know that this is a model number of the prototype board? Because I do. All right.
Because it's so screen.
Yes. Now, there you go. So, yeah. That's where it's actually, that's where all of the magic is actually burned into the ROM. So this is important stuff for the driver. Yeah, of course.
So it's actually configuration data too.
Yeah, it teaches the driver, if you request this power setting, this is your fudge factor when you actually program the transmitter or whatever.
Oh, so it's the default VIP 19213.
There you go. So that stuff there, that's so the vendor burns that in, and then the vendor version of OpenWRT, DDWRT, or whatever may or may not read that for whatever reason. So it can or can't use that. That's arbitrary to whatever they're doing. Like our FreeBSD Wi-Fi stuff doesn't actually look at that. The more important stuff is all of the, okay, here's, you know, channel, you know, primary channel 6, AP channel mode 11, all this kind of good stuff, and then we start getting into what to actually attenuate. This is interesting, not necessarily important, but the Atheros wireless driver will fail if this stuff isn't present and you haven't mapped it correctly. Loser, are you about to just
Wow.
Well, at this rate, it'll be done by dinner.
The university is bound to have like a drill press with like an easy out or a big bit.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, if they had HP server gear, because every ProLiant from the Compact days, yeah. They all have the right screwdriver on the back of them. I just don't have one with me because I don't use that stuff anymore. Or actually, do I? Did I leave one in? Sometimes I wonder what I do. It's fine. It's fine. No one's ever going to put that case lid back on anyway. I brought that to be destroyed this week, so don't. It's not that big of a deal. Okay, so that's the configuration partition, which is, that's the only part that we actually care about. And when I say care about, I mean never, ever, ever touch. And you should immediately back it up. Like we have just done, we have backed it up off of the machine here onto here, and now you put it somewhere.
You can DD it back.
And you can, absolutely, you can DDD it back and it's fine.
You should copy it full
flash. You should, what he said. You should, because you will find, when you're doing science, sometimes you have experiments that fail. So let's go just some of the more technical, some of the more BSD-centric stuff here. So in the MIPS directory, there's all of this crap. Okay. I consider the way that FreeBSD does this is a bit of a bug. I kind of like the OpenWRT style. We'll look at that in a second. But for every one of those, and those things get revved about every 6 months, there is a kernel configuration. So if you guys want to start messing with this stuff, you'll notice how quickly these things propagate. So the base system, these guys right here are the Atheros, like this is what this model, this reference platform can actually do. These are all of the things in it and whatnot that, you know, this is where the Atheros Ethernet switch is, this is where the Atheros wireless is, this is what usually the flash looks like, it's the defaults. And then here's the reference board for this guy that you could get as an Atheros developer. And then these are two that I've been messing with. This one here is actually that one that's over there. Here's the TP-Link that's cut off. That one, quite a few people have had good success with. There we go. Over. Okay. Do that again. This one is a really, really, really easy to use, not very secure in the slightest Buffalo model. So this one is really great to play with, but don't put it anywhere where you care about your data. This one will TFTP anonymously on every boot. So if somebody is on your network and provides a TFTP server with a flash image, it will auto burn that image to its flash for you. But it's branded as OpenWRT friendly, and there's no way to turn that off unless you do something. So this one was the first one.
Did they build that in the 60s or something?
Absolutely, right? Because nobody's going to have a rogue TFTP server on your network. This one? It's only like 12 months old.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's 24K Atheros. It's got, you know, it works fine. I have one. I didn't bring it with me for entertainment reasons.
The URL's missing.
Yes. Yeah, we should probably add that soon.
Especially since I'm carrying one in my hand.
I know, right? Yeah, we can probably add that tonight. So this stuff here is, if you guys are interested in 64K MIPS, which is not these, talk to the Cambridge kids. They have all of this 64K Berry stuff, which is based on FPGAs, I think. Yeah. And that's where they're doing it. You see people walking around with these router stations. They're kind of cool. Pico Station, friend of mine and Adrian have been working on. It's about this big. It's a transmitter. It has one Ethernet port out to your network and a wireless transceiver. And it's really great as a little repeater. or other things that you may want to do on wireless networks that you're interested in seeing. This one's really good for that. Now, all right, so these are all kernel configs. Who gives a crap? You know, obviously the kernel's gonna be able to compile.
I don't know why you would use those things.
Why would you do that? Oh, as a comparison. All right, hold on. So this is one of my objections to the way that we do stuff. So if you're familiar with the FreeBSD kernel configuration file, all right, so this is for that one. We start off with this as our base parameter. We have a whole bunch of device-specific hints, and this is how we do device enumeration in this world. It's actually kind of gruesome. We'll look at that in a second. It's got a GPIO bus. This unit itself, with that little tiny thing, can do VLAN switching, all kinds of really awesome things. Let's see. All right. In order to do the magic with doing a compressed disk image, burning it onto flash, and then uncompressing it into RAM, you need this guy. This is the magical flag that does all that. So you're going to build a compressed image and then burn that onto flash, and then at boot time the kernel's going to go, oh, my root file system is here, let me uncompress that and then mount it as a RAM disk. This is the configurations that I use to netboot, obviously, and this is the only thing you need when you're actually burning it onto flash. So you need this and this, and this stuff is for TFTP booting.
So you put the root name into kernel config. Oh, because we don't have loader.conf.
In this universe? Well, how are you going to get to it? Because it's on the flash compressed, so you have to uncompress it, but you don't know what the name of it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have EFI protecting you and giving you this warm embrace of love and joy. So this is where it gets super messy. I hate this crap. It's taken me at least a year to get to the point where I can go, oh, okay. We can talk about mechanically what this stuff actually means, what the buses are, why we have these offsets, and instead of having the driver do things that would be sensible. It's really, really makes me angry. This
the crap out of the driver.
Say what?
It looks like you're telling the driver what to do in a very detailed way.
Well, yeah, because we don't have. Did you get it? That's why we keep.
It took two of us in addition to you.
That's why we keep Lou's around. Thank you. So don't worry about the rest of this. You can ask me in email. It'll be fine. Notice I've left up here this guy. It's very important to know where that is. That's going to be passed to the driver. Notice this stuff here, and notice this. The wireless adapters on that machine are on a PCI bus. I put air quotes around that because it's on a PCI bus. So you can LSPCI and you can actually see things. This is what I kind of wanted to get into, how I know that stuff is where I think it is, right? That I know that this is where it is. U-Boot will tell me, the vendor firmware will tell me, which we'll see in a minute. And then we have to do the magic of telling everything where we know, where are the partitions, what are the offsets in hexadecimal on the flash device, and how we get to stuff. So for example, I've taken this partition here that is called the Lang partition so that they could sell this thing in different countries and whatnot. And they just burn, they take the same unit and they burn a different language into it. I've just taken that and called it my arbitrary config partition for this unit, and I've set the read-only flag off. So this is the only part of flash from user land when the thing is actually up and running that you can read and write from. And then a little bit more. And the so the Mac Atheros, especially this one, has a 64K piece of flash dedicated to store the MAC addresses and ASCII. We can look at that. We can look at that later. It really, really entertained me when we found that. And then this is the magical art. Never, ever, ever, ever touch it. Back it up forever and ever and ever. Back up the whole flash, as Luz said. Okay, so kernel config, device hints. Once you mess with it and you figure, you get to a point where your net booting and stuff works, then we can start talking about actually burning it onto flash. That's going to be vendor specific. Every vendor is going to have a different way of getting stuff. Luz actually turned me on to this syntax right here. You guys kind of understand what that's doing. It's very, very goofy. So it's saying your partition is going to start at that address into flash. And then I'm going to search in starting the end of this partition is going to be starting somewhere around here, searching in this size for something that looks like that in text. Okay? So in other words, when the kernel boots up, it's going to go, oh, well, I think the kernel ends here because I saw this. And this comes out of the very first thing that's in the file system. And then then for the root file system, we do the inverse. We say, okay, start there for the beginning, search in this size chunks, and look for this, and that's the beginning. And then I have a hard end in flash at here, because the next partition is here, and then here, and then here. So, what does all that mean? There are 1,000 different ways you can do this. Adrian, myself, and Hiran Panchasarov kind of whacked on this. There's ZRouter. We may want to resurrect ZRouter at some point because it's actually got a lot of features that we like. Crochet is another thing that you can use to do this. I use this because it uses Make, and I like Make. And on here, you can actually, yeah, so as long as you got the kernel on the flash, you can have your root file system be on a USB storage device. So in the event, you know, 8 meg or 4 meg is insufficient, okay, we'll get a terabyte. It'll work. You can UFS, ZFS? I don't know. 128 meg of RAM? I don't know.
It's somehow the term embedded in ZFS.
Talk to the ARM kids. Talk to the ARM kids. They're doing it. Why not? I have a primitive explanation on how to do net booting and stuff. Generally, all the configurations and whatnot. This is a subversion project that's out of Tree. I try to go into, you know, quality soldering. You notice the, I don't know what I was, I must have had way too much coffee because that thing ended up down here and those are over there and then the cables go in. But I just want to generally give people an idea of what the layout looks like. And then what it's going to look like when it boots up, what the menus are, kind of the stuff we just went over, right? And so this is, in general, what the thing looks like when that one boots up. So unlike our AMD 64 universe, let's go look at this guy. So I've got a little bit of stuff. How to build the firmware. Like, what is the command? Once you've checked out this code, what is the command line you should run? So this one, again, completely different way to get firmware installed. It's going to look different. It's got the firmware files have signatures on them. Sometimes it's just a string. Sometimes it's padding. Sometimes it's whatever. When the system boots up, it'll tell you. U-boot will tell you what Linux is probably going to look for. So MTD parts is the term that's used to explain where all of the where the subdivisions of stuff are. U-boot only cares about where the kernel is.
And signature, by signatures you mean
that's what the loader's looking at.
When it looks at when it actually looks at the firmware file before it flashes it, it'll look to see if there's some signature string, and I'll show you exactly what I mean.
Not in a security sense, but in an identification.
That's it. Yeah. So that you don't accidentally put the wrong firmware on the machine. And so like this one obviously is quite a while ago. It's 10 alpha, and it does all the things, and it's got all the stuff and all the bits. Here's a little bit more. With all the things. So let me see if I can browse to the right spot here. Oh yeah, browse, sweet. Trunk, build bin build, and we'll look at air station. All right, a little bit of arbitrary stuff. Notice at the bottom, so when we actually go to concatenate the image together into bits and pieces, that's if this string isn't at the beginning, it'll reject the firmware file. How do we know that? With a hex editor and look at the firmware file. We look at the D-link. Let's see, did I move that? Okay, so in the D-link, guess what? We have two different models of D-links. And they have two different text signatures. This one here, and this one here. And those have to be in the image file when it's created. All right.
The full image, not like the kernel or anything, it's just like the full, once you pack it all together.
Yeah, so this is, so. Let me clear up some terminology, because I am kind of bouncing around from topic to topic. So when I say the firmware image, the FreeBSD firmware image, I mean this product. So this is the entire kernel, the entire root file system, and whatever arbitrary signature. This is the thing that's going to get burned to flash. Precisely. Yeah. It's not, you know, there isn't any super maximum security wizardry happening here. It's literally, okay, cat, and then echo. I mean, more or less. Let's see. We did that. This is publicly available BSD licensed. Have fun with it. It depends on the base system having a kernel configuration for the router. If you have an out-of-tree kernel config that you don't want to commit to FreeBSD, you can do that with this project. So if you have a piece of hardware that you don't want